Welcome to the Goddesses of Social Work podcast, hosted by Renita Ray Davis, licensed clinical social worker, board-approved social work clinical supervisor, and facilitator of the Goddesses of Social Work supervision community. Join us as we travel through the social work journeys told by the Goddesses of Social Work community members, past and present, as they make their way toward clinical licensure.
Welcome to the Goddesses of Social Work podcast and our special series highlighting speakers and guests of the upcoming Affirming Our Presence Behavioral Health Conference, June 20th through 23rd, 2024, in Plano, Texas. I am your host, Renita Ray Davis, and I'm here today with Dr. Althea Gale, EDD, LCSW, PEL, whose Affirming Our Presence conference topic is Role Clarity, Be a Pioneer. Dr. Althea Gale is a licensed clinical social worker in Illinois and Indiana. She operates her own private practice, Excel Therapy, PLLC. She earned her Master of Arts in Social Service Administration, equivalent to an MSW, from the University of Chicago, and continued her studies to get a doctorate in educational leadership at the University of St. Francis. Currently, she is an assistant professor focusing on child welfare and school social work. Prior to entering academia, she worked as a school social worker for 9 years and worked in the nonprofit sector working with at-risk youth. Althea is passionate about being an effective servant leader, advocating for youth within urban educational settings, and influencing other compassionate leaders in social, emotional well-being, and social justice efforts. Welcome to the show, Dr. Gale.
I am so happy to be here. Thank you for having me, Renita.
So glad you said yes. Dr. Gale, you were Althea growing up. Who or what did you want to be when you were growing up?
So when I was growing up, it was kind of multifaceted. So I always wanted to be a librarian. I always felt very comfortable in a library. I used to love reading, which I still do, right? But thinking about it in the past. And then I also wanted to be a pediatrician. Being that I come from a mother who's been a nurse for many, many years, being a part of the health field has been part of my being, right? Going to work with her or other family members that were in the medical field as well. But the being a librarian is just where I felt comfortable. I always loved being at school. I used to love and helping out the library, being able to find things that other people couldn't find, being resourceful, being able to share my thoughts on a piece of paper, because I know I always didn't share my thoughts verbally. So it's kind of a way of me showing up and showing out. And I think as an adult, I kind of in the little realms of all of that, but just in a different way.
I love that. You know what? I wanted to be a librarian too. I don't think I've ever told anybody that.
Really? Yes. Oh my gosh.
When you said that, yeah, I was like, oh, I wanted to be a librarian too.
Yeah. Okay. So it's really interesting you talk about being a librarian too, because I don't know if you've noticed, but there's a lot more social workers now in librarian systems. So social workers are available to help with resources, are able to check in with people if they need to. It's a growing kind of aspect in the field. I would love to learn more about it. But hey, that goes back to where I wanted to do as a kid. Maybe now as a social worker, I kind of maneuver my way into that space again.
Absolutely. I actually have one of my social workers that I have the honor of supervising. She brought the idea of social workers in library to my awareness because they do that in New York. And that was one of her internships. And she said that doing needs assessments for the community was happening in libraries, and we were able, because a lot of people, what Brittany was saying was a lot of people are going to their emergency rooms to get resources, and they're being exposed, as you know, to COVID and other infectious diseases that they don't have to be exposed to. If we had access to social workers at libraries, they wouldn't necessarily have to go to their emergency room to get what it is that they are looking for.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many different ways that we could support people. That's very interesting.
Yeah, she said that her one of her internship instructors is now getting their doctorate in social work and library. So yeah,
Wow.
I think it is a growing field.
It
I don't
is.
want to jump ahead to your session topic, but it's a pioneering endeavor within the social work profession is having social work in libraries. Oh, Althea, I gotta ask you then, because you love reading like I do. And so what's on your to be read, or what are you currently reading right now?
I'm really big into urban fiction, but the last book I read was Black Cake. It was a Hulu series, and it's also a book as well. It really helped me tap into my Caribbean background and really like get involved into the book and just really enjoy it. And something to do outside of talking to clients or speaking with my students or working with my colleagues. It was just a way of me to kind of turn everything off and just hone into something that I was passionate about.
Absolutely. And when I talk to social workers about reading, they're like, I don't have time to read, or they
I
feel too
know.
overwhelmed or too, just exhausted from the work that we do, because social work is a tough profession. But reading actually is a form of self-care, especially when you're not reading a
It is.
textbook.
Yes.
Yeah.
And when I read urban fiction, I have to do it when I have time because I get very caught up in the books and the characters. And so then I forget to do the things that I'm supposed to do, priorities. So I do use that as a way of self-care, but I do it when I have the time to actually get it done.
Absolutely. There's balance in everything. There's balance in all
Yes.
things. Yeah.
Yes.
So, Dr. Gail, I am so curious. Tell me a little bit about your social work journey. How did you get here? Where do you want to go? What are your plans?
Okay, so I talked about childhood, wanting to be a pediatrician, trying to emulate my mom being part of the medical field. So I got into school via pre-med for undergrad. Eventually, that shifted until I was doing sociology with a concentration in African American studies. During that time, I was working with a nonprofit organization, volunteering, doing tutoring. And during that time, I met a young man who had lost two social workers during his time being in the organization. He was awarded a state, so he checked in with his social worker as part of case management. And I didn't know what social work was, but I became his person. I was the person that he trusted, that he talked to, that he asked for advice, that if he needed something, he'll come to me. He felt comfortable. So in that moment, I was getting ready to graduate from undergrad. I'm like, what am I going to do next? I started doing more research on social work, and I realized as a sociologist, it was like right in the ballpark of what I really wanted to do. So got into school with my master's with getting going to social work. And that's my story. I mean, over time, I think that I've always been very nurturing. I've always been a sense of peace for people to come to and vent and know that their information is safe, that I can give good information to them to help them process whatever they were going through. So being a social worker just helps me to continue to fulfill what I was supposed to be here to do.
Absolutely. You're a child of a healer with your mama being a nurse.
Oh,
So
yes.
yeah. So I'm curious too, because there's a lot of social workers in the hospital settings. That's one of the areas we are in. We're everywhere. Did you have access when you were going to work with your mom and or with other family members? Did you ever see or know that there were social workers in the hospitals at that time?
Actually, no. I was not aware of social workers being in the hospital setting until I got, into my graduate program. But I also know that at times there have been, moments where social workers are not as easily accessible. So that could have been part of it as well. But I always had the understanding that the nurses were the social workers too, because they were there to listen and be there for the patient and things like that. So everyone does it in a sense, but we are formally trained to really provide the right assessments, the right interventions, be an understanding of what's being presented to us and being able to meet the client where they're at. So I didn't have that background of knowing that they were social workers in a hospital, but I'm sure they were there. And I think nowadays there's a lot more access, which is wonderful.
Absolutely. And I think I'm talking to you during Nurses Week. So
Yes,
please tell your mom,
it is.
yeah, please tell your mama happy Nurses Week. And
I sure will.
one of the in my history of being able to, my own career, but also having access to so many social workers, it feels like there's this tension between nurses and social workers. And I'm curious, what has been, being a daughter of a nurse and now being this long time licensed clinical social worker, has been your experience between the relationship between nurses and social workers?
I think it's what I've noticed it to be more of a mutual kind of relationship because there's always that warm handoff that's happening from the nurse that's beginning with the assessments, building that rapport with that patient for whatever reason they're there visiting, and need understanding that there are other aspects that the patient may need, being able to give that warm handoff to the social worker. In a sense, we're now consulting about what are the presentation of this patient, what do they need, how there can be additional support, what type of resources they need, even if it's just in care at that moment or discharging and getting resources outside of being in the hospital setting. I think it's very beneficial, very mutual. I think it's a necessary relationship that needs to happen. And I think that everyone understands what their role is in that moment. Very similar, but the way that a nurse is going to handle a patient will be different than a social worker is going to navigate that patient as well, but they're doing similar jobs.
And both are needed.
Yes,
Absolutely.
very
Both are
sure.
needed. Dr. Gail, I got you all in the medical field. And you
Hey, story of my
actually,
life, story of my life.
but you actually are within the school system, both as a school social worker and now at the university level. Do you want to talk about how you got into school social work and then now as a professor?
Yeah, for sure. I think that I'm going to start in the middle somewhere and work my way backwards, right? So, being that I was able to get my doctorate, I'm a first generation American, both parents and all my grandparents are born in a different country, Jamaica and Panama. So, being that I'm here in America and I have the opportunity to do this, I want to be a doctor. Maybe not a doctor in the medical field because that's where I started out in undergrad, but then I transitioned over to social work, but I'm able to have my doctorate in education leadership. So, being that once I finished my master's program, I did concentrate on school social work. If we go back to our first question, I've always felt comfortable in a school setting. Why not be a nurturer, a supporter, a trusted adult, connecting students to the building and be a school social worker? So I was able to do school social work for 9 years. That was my first big girl job, right? That's what I call it. And after the 9 years, during that time, I went and got my doctorate, and then I was able to transition over to academia. Really enjoyed being a school social worker, being able to understand person environment, understanding students and the systems that they had a part of their lives and helping them to thrive and succeed in academics rather than a classroom or just overall the school environment, providing that social emotional support, along with understanding the needs that they had, not only just academically, but with mental health, right? Understanding diagnoses and what type of interventions are going to be beneficial, things like that. And then transition to academia, it was my way of challenging myself in a different way. Definitely wanted to use all the degrees that I went to school for. And the academia piece was exciting because I am now training other school social workers. I am now being that leader and modeling what a school social worker looks like, sounds like, and what it should look like, even if it's in different districts and different systems. So I'm able to still do my passion and my love, but now I'm doing a sense of I'm now putting all these wonderful school social workers out into the world and allowing them to continue to support the students academically. academically, support them social emotionally, help with the things that they need with resources and understand the systems that's a part of their lives. So I kind of get to do a full circle and really make all that work in a sense that I feel fulfilled and I'm able to nurture and pour into others as I've always done, but now I also can do in terms of training up more leaders in order to thrive and succeed in those environments as well.
And I think that's so important, Dr. Gill, because when those of us who are getting to, like you said, train up other leaders now are still so passionate and in love with the field, and we can hand off that baton, that passion, that love. And especially, you know, I'm going to, women of color in this profession, being able to train up not just other women of color, but the diverse, beautiful rainbow of social workers that come into this field to say, these are what your clients look like, and this is how we treat them well and with respect. And so being able to do that, I think, is so critical. And I just love your passion for it. It's just oozing, and I'm loving that. I want to go back to the middle of your story a little bit. I heard you say that one of the reasons you wanted to get your doctorate was because you are first generation, and congratulations. I know that your family must be so super proud of you.
Yes.
I know they are, but I guess I'm curious, but why the EDD? You know, because I talk to a lot of social workers after they get their MSW, and some, you know, they'd go back to do the PhD in so many different areas and or the DSW. Why did you decide on the EDD?
Doing the EDD was part of the program that I was a part of. It kind of fell in my lap. Someone brought it to my attention, and it was in the same city that I was actually being a school social worker. And when I looked at the program, it was a fairly new program. It was 3.5 years. It was a non-traditional program. I was able to take classes and write my dissertation at the same time. But what I liked about it was geared towards leadership. That's where the servant leader came from, right? I worked and tried to do biology, and then I did sociology, and then social work, and then I'm in education. And then this educational piece allowed me to surround myself with other professionals that were necessarily not in education. Someone was in HR, someone was a banker, someone was a nurse, someone was a principal. We were all from different professional realms, but we were still all doing an educational leadership program. And this allowed us the opportunity to collaborate with one another from different disciplines, being able to find our passions and use that as part of our research to write our dissertation. I was able to show up as a school social worker, but still learn more about systems in terms of how to lead a board meeting, how to be a leader, how to understand your audience, how to understand what is needed, and how can I do that using my resources, looking at ethical dilemmas and being able to understand that. I think that also helped me to round myself well as a social worker, because then now I was forced to do presentations. And because I was forced to do presentations, I'm now able to show up and show out differently, even if I'm stepping outside of my comfort zone. So I think the education leadership found me, and it still benefits me because education is where I feel comfortable. I've always felt comfortable in education. Being a leader is what I've been called to do. So having that program and building those relationships was very beneficial. And it also led me to where I'm teaching. I am teaching in the same university that I went to school, which I wasn't aware of this university until it fell into my lap. So it kind of all helped in a positive way. And I'm proud to say that I have an educational leadership doctorate, and I'm also a social worker. So I really like that. I think this was also a good thing for me. I wasn't sure if I was more on the research side or more of the teaching side. And this allowed me to navigate between both roles, and it's put me where I'm at now currently.
That's great. You know, when you were talking about the leadership, being able to run a board meeting, being able to do present, one of the things that I have found in, you know, being able to do this beautiful work for over the last 2 decades is social workers, we are so good with people, but then you get us into the administrative side. And I have had social workers who've been my supervisor who were great people leaders, but then that administrative piece would be just the thing that burnt them out or stressed them out, or they weren't able to effectively manage it as well as they hoped that they could. And so I think, hearing you talk about your journey and not going the DSW route or the PhD in social work route, you're able to be, like you said, more well-rounded in leading and teaching social workers how to be leaders, even within not just with people, but also with managing organizations and buildings and paperwork. I am gonna ask another question that I was curious about in regards to your bio. What is, because you are Dr. Althea Gale, EdD, LCSW, PEL. I was curious, what is the PEL?
So here in Illinois, professional education license gives me a school social work endorsement. So that's just the fancy way to say I'm a school social worker.
I
It
love it.
gets a little confusing at times, but that's how it is. Got to go with and roll with it.
No, I totally look, here in Alabama, we have a LICSW, and people are like, so what does the I stand for?
I'm curious, what does
Independent.
the I stand
Well,
for?
it's lic. Well, oh, can I give you a little history? So before, a few years ago, we were LCSW PIP. I'm still a PIP, and PIP is private independent practitioner. That means you could hang your shingle, right? But then they were shifting from removing the PIP, as a few of us still have it, and they wanted to just add the I. So the LICSW means we can hang our shingles still. We've done all the work, but we don't have to do the PIP anymore. And the PIP was an additional 2 years of supervision, outside of the clinical supervision. And so they were like, you know what, the clinical license is enough. It's enough. And so we'll just do the LICSW. And so even though there's still a few of us in Alabama who have the PIP, if you once you do the clinical exam, you are now LICSW in Alabama.
We are all multifaceted as a
It
social work group because it's credentials out the wazoo everywhere.
Yes, I know. I was talking to a social worker recently who's like, one of the things they would like for us as a profession nationally, for us to just to have all the same credentials.
It would be nice. It'll be a lot easier.
Yes.
We all doing the same work, it's just different by state. So it would be nice
Absolutely.
to have that uniformity across the nation.
So I'm going to go ahead and move on to our next question. And the reason that you are here, which is the Affirming Our Presence Behavioral Health Conference, which is happening June 20th through 23rd, 2024, in Plano, Texas. Our wonderful facilitator, Jasmine, has put that on for us. And we're just curious, why did you decide to submit a speaker proposal to this beautiful conference?
Oh my gosh. So last year I was able to be a participant. I've started to join a lot more Black social work networks, and they shared this conference last year, and I said, I'm going. And I went by myself. Luckily, I had a girlfriend that was there that I realized we were going together. That was great, but I was going because I wanted to be able to be amongst other Black professionals, especially Black women that are supporting individuals that are either transitioning some way in their life or mental health is an issue. But I was so excited to do that. And being a participant, I mean, a Jasmine, I mean, I was sold. I love the atmosphere. Her personality is absolutely amazing. Felt very comfortable. It was organized, it was put together. And I told her last year, I said, I'm going to submit for a presentation next year. And I had the opportunity to do it, and I did. And I'm excited for it because I am a representation of this conference. I am a representation of Jasmine, and she has paved the way and done wonderful things with this conference and all the work that she's doing. Yes, I want to be a part of that too. So I'm really excited to be up there and doing a breakout session for other women that are in the same field as I am, so that we can be in fellowship with one another and continue to learn from each other.
Absolutely. And she's a pioneer, but we're not going to get there yet. I'm going to wait for that one
All right.
because Jasmine is also a pioneer. But I want to kind of sit in this energy a little bit about why do you feel like conferences like this one are important for us?
I think conferences like this are important because, in general, and I use air quotes, Black women are not supposed to get along with each other. We're supposed to fight one another. We're not supposed to be in the same spaces, or we can't get along in the same spaces. So I believe that we need to eradicate that. We need to be able to be comfortable being in the same spaces with each other, be in the same room to share ideas, share stories and experiences, and share consultation in terms of we're doing the same things. What I know, you know. What you know, I know, because we're able to learn from each other. I think that's very important. I believe that I am open to learn new things from new people, and I think spaces like this allow us the opportunity to actually do that.
Absolutely. I was telling someone this is my 24th year with my degree in social work, and I still consider myself a baby social worker, and I have so much to learn from so many people. And so, I've had Gabby who's doing social work travel 101, and she's been a social worker for less than 5 years, and I learned so much from her. It was just like all of these social workers are, and Jasmine has done other helping professionals as well, not just social workers, but other helping professionals as well are coming and from just across the state, across ages, across different types of experiences. And we all can just learn so much from each other. And when you said, because I guess because I'm surrounded by so many beautiful Black female social workers that Black women aren't supposed to get along. I was like, what? I forgot that was one of the stereotypes. You're absolutely right.
I try to go against that as much as I can. It's unfortunate that that is a stereotype. Unfortunately, we see that a lot in our media aspects, right? A lot of reality TV, a lot of things that are happening over different platforms, things like that. And I don't think it has to be that way. So I'm very grateful for this type of experience and opportunity because we are beautiful women showing up for each other. Why can't we do that as behavioral therapists? Amazing. Like you said, different walks of life, different regions, the geographic locations. Like, that is so awesome.
Absolutely, absolutely awesome. Oh, I've been waiting to do this part. Can you give us a brief description of your session topic, Dr. Gail? Role clarity, be a pioneer. Give us a brief description of that.
So, role clarity is how you show up as a therapist, as a clinician, as a student training to become a clinician, a therapist. What are your expectations of self, and how are you going to show up for your clients? What should your clients expect from you? You understanding your foundation, your morals, your ethics, your values. And how is that leaking, and whatever fact that may look like. And so it's a way of really understanding self. And Pioneer is a acronym kind of foundation that I use that I will share a little bit later. But I use that acronym and Pioneer as a foundation of who I am and how I'm going to show up. And so that's what that role clarity looks like. Understanding your power, understanding your privilege, understanding your light and how that shines and nurtures other people, and what that can look like for you if you don't already know. And it also can be a nice reflection piece for you as well, in order to understand what is your why in the profession that you've chosen.
Absolutely. I think if you start with I'm agreeing with you, just saying it in my way. But if you start with what is it that I'm doing? What is my role? And in fact, you know, when you were just saying that, going back to that initial question in regards to your mom being the beautiful nurse that she is, and us talking about the role between social workers and nurses in the hospital, you immediately was like, those are two different roles. They're similar, but they're two different roles. And social workers do this and nurses do that. And when we both know what our roles are, the warm handoff seems a little bit more seamless. But when we're not clear about what our roles are, that's when it kind of gets a little bit murky. So it just feels like you just are in, know what your role is, and social work career is going to be beautiful.
Yeah. Because if you think about it, we do a lot of collaboration. There's so many people that we're working with on a daily basis, not only just our clients. So being able to understand everyone's role is out of respect, because what I'm able to do may not be similar to what someone else is going to do. We are often providing referrals and resources. We want to understand what is the reason why this person's going to show up for a client if we need to, or why are we consulting with this person in order to support the client and what they need. So I think roles is important, and it doesn't come from a place of disrespect. It's just making sure things are done seamlessly. Things are done in a way that's appropriate, and it makes it a cohesive and conductive experience for everyone that's involved.
Absolutely. And, you know, I don't know where this memory came from, but I'm just going to bring it up. I remember when I used to write grants for a nonprofit, when they would ask for request for funding, they would say, are there any other programs in the community doing the thing that you're asking for funding for? And you had to be really succinct and clear about how your program look different from another program that may be offering something that may look similar, but was still different. And it just feels like as people and as social workers, if we got really clear about how am I offering, you are called social worker and I'm called social worker, but how does my social work practice look different than what your social work practice and or me being in this room with nurses and doctors? What is it that I'm bringing to the table that is completely different than what they're bringing to the table?
Yes. I even think about it in terms of an IEP meeting. We're sitting at the table, focused on this one particular student, and we have the psychologist, we have the nurse, we have an occupational therapist, a speech pathologist, special education teacher, general education teacher. We're all saying the same things, but we're saying it in a different way because we're impacting the student in a certain way. And at the end of the day, we get this wonderful document done that's going to follow these babies as they go through the education career, and it's going to help them to thrive and succeed. We are now allowing ourselves as professionals to have everyone show up in the same space and feel like they have a way of showing their talents and who they are. And they're not being shadowed by somebody else's expertise. So it's a way of everybody having that space to show up and show out and thrive and succeed for the ending result. And I agree with that, especially like you say with the grant writing, right? There's going to be someone that's doing something very similar than you are. But guess what? We're not the same people. We may not even have the same mission. We may have a similar mission, but it's going to be different. So yeah, and also that's with the grant writing piece as well. You know, that's important. You have to be very exhaustive. So I think, yes, that is a really good example to kind of support what I'm saying with that too.
Absolutely. And why then, you know, I told you before we hit record, I loved your topic, but why is this topic so important to you, especially as a first-time presenter at this beautiful conference?
I think so as I always say, expectations for yourself professionally and personally. I think it's doing the same for me as well. Professionally, I have to get out of my comfort zone. I have to be able to show up. I have to be able to teach. And rather than teach in a classroom or in a therapy session or just in life in general, personally, it's the, oh my gosh, I'm scared, I'm anxious, I'm nervous, I don't know what to do. But then I'm allowing myself to step out of that comfort zone. So being able to present and being able to present this topic allows me to break barriers for myself and allow other people to show up as well. We have externalizers in this world. We have internalizers in this world. And I want everybody to be comfortable in that space and show up. But they're choosing what that looks like for them. I'm creating a space for that. And I'm not forcing, but I'm allowing you to kind of elevate yourself in a way that, oh, I'm shocked. I didn't know I could show up that way. I didn't even think about that. Oh my gosh, the reflecting piece, because I'm doing the same thing as I'm going to stand up there and talk to everyone about my topic.
And we're going to be cheering you on. We're going to be cheering you on. So excited for you. You know, we didn't even get to Excel Therapy. I just love the name of your private practice, Excel Therapy. So besides, tell us more about Excel Therapy, but also besides Excel Therapy, we would love for you to be able to promote your own attributes, businesses, and successes that you're currently experiencing right now.
Okay, so Excel Therapy is my private practice. Right now, it is virtual. I am licensed in Illinois, and I'm also licensed in Indiana. I do accept private pay, but I'm also paneled with Blue Cross Blue Shield, PPO. My business and Excel Therapy is just that brave space, being able to come to that space, feel comfortable, let your hair down. I kind of feel like this is just my aura. I do this everywhere, right? But the private practice allows me to do it in a way that it's clinical, is very structured, is done in a very professional way. And that's just what I want to give. Allow yourself the opportunity to exhale and know that excellence has a lasting effect. You can show up in this space for whatever reason that you need to. You can access me, what do you need from me? And we're just going to go in that energy. Excel Therapy is important to me because it's something that I didn't know that I was going to do. I didn't see myself being a businesswoman or doing a private practice, but I'm now allowing myself to step out of my comfort zone. I am open to doing more conferences and more speaking. I'm in the process of doing research because I'm also a professor. Being on a tenure track, I have the opportunity to do that. And so I have a large passion for at-risk African-American boys, being able to help them thrive and understand who they are and the systems that they're part of and their support system around them. And then also dismantling the school-to-prison pipeline, understanding behavioral practices, discipline practices in the school setting. But just recently, I recognized that being a first-generation American, being a Caribbean-American woman, being a proud Jamaican-American woman, I want to tap in more into a population of, we are children of Caribbean immigrants. Rather that is whatever country in the West Indies, understanding that that sometimes needs a space where we can feel open to talk, being able to release, being able to understand the cultural aspects of growing up, being able to have that foundation, and then how we are going out into this big world and learning more about ourselves and our experiences and how we show up based on our foundation of being Caribbean. So that is something that I definitely want to start tapping into. And so I think, you know, I'm still navigating what this all looks for me, but I'm really excited to know that Excel Therapy is my baby and I'm going to continue to see it thrive and succeed. And I'm going to show up in many different spaces that I didn't know that I was capable of doing, but I know I got it. I'm a leader. I'm going to be able to do it and it's going to go well.
Yes, absolutely. You know what I was thinking when you were just talking? Excel Therapy is your foundation, and then your beautiful lineage is you found your niche. You found your niche, yes. It sounds like. And so yes. As you continue to just expand what you're capable of doing as a social worker, it's almost like I saw you, okay, I climbed this mountain. Oh, the horizon, there's so many other opportunities. Then you climb the next mountain and then you're realizing, oh, there's even more opportunities. And so that's so beautiful. How did you, you know, I didn't know I was going to ask this question, but you know, I'm a private practice owner as well. And it's when you're talking about how you went into your doctorate program and everything just kind of fell into your lap, I'm curious too, like, how did you become a private practice owner? You know, did you, because you said, I didn't know I was going to do this, but now here you are doing it.
I think it was once I was able to obtain my clinical license, there were so many doors that opened in that moment. And I dibble dabbled in the group practice, and I loved what I did. I loved the people that I was able to be introduced to and support and help. And I recognized that I can do that as well. I wanted to be able to have a little bit more autonomy, being able to decide what my practice was going to look like, how I'm going to show up, what those conversations can be, and then just what I am capable of doing. I think it was a piece of me that wanted to step out of my comfort zone and know that I can do it, just like my doctorate, know that I can do it and do it, right? And of course, having now has brought that I didn't know, right? Over the horizon, I tackled one thing, then I tackled the next thing. But I think that being able to get the feel of group practice pushed me to the space of doing private practice and saying that I have a business, which is off just
Definitely.
awesome, and being my own boss.
Yes. Love being our own bosses. Awesome. And in fact, that leads me to my next question. Yeah. And in fact, that leads me to my next question. What is one belief about social work that you started on this journey with that you feel has changed the most?
Being a social worker to me is tapping into your talents, allowing common sense to be common sense, being able to be a lifetime learner, and also my pioneer foundation kind of comes into play here. So being a pioneer is your foundation and what you want others to expect from you. So I want you to have perseverance, have integrity, take opportunities that are presented to you, be a nurturer, show excellence, promote equity, build rapport, and be resilient. Being a pioneer means all these things. And being able to understand that and able to show up in that sense allows for an amazing experience as a social worker.
I've so enjoyed this conversation. And one of the things that I love asking amazing social workers like yourself is to give advice to our audience members that are listening. And I wanted to ask you about Pioneer. And I love the acronym that you've created. And I'm going to actually ask you to repeat it one more time. But then going into what advice would you give those who, because I believe in being a trailblazer, but though there we have some folks who are in the background or they have background versions of themselves and are scared to come front and center and show the world who they are. What advice would you give folks who are wanting to be that pioneer but are too afraid to do so?
I think it's important to let your light shine, not allowing others to dim it. It's very scary to put yourself out front and center, but once you tippy toe and you get to that space, it opens so many things for you. You start showing yourself that you are capable of doing things you didn't know you could do. You allow others to understand you in a different way. You are authentic to who you are. And I think that if you're able to get out of that space of comfort, then you're able to open the doors for so many other things. You have to do that in your own time, though. You do your own research, you have your own conversations, you allow people to mentor you if that's what you need. But being in this space helps you to navigate your world differently, professionally, and personally. So just allowing yourself to let your light shine and getting out that comfort zone is going to be beneficial.
Absolutely. And Dr. Gale, give us that Pioneer acronym one more time. That was amazing.
So pioneer is to show perseverance, to show integrity, take the opportunity that I presented to you, be a nurturer, be excellent or show excellence in the way that you see fit. Always promoting equity, building rapport, but also being very resilient. There are a lot of things that we're all navigating in terms of things, adversities that have affected us. We want to push past that and be able to combat some of the things that may have ne been negative in your life and bring more positivity, provide change. And then being able to sometimes, when we support others, we're also healing ourselves. So being resilient is going to be really important.
Resilience is one of my favorite words. I love that. That's an amazing acronym. I'm gonna just use acronyms all week long. I love that. That was amazing acronym. Oh, goodness gracious, Dr. Gill. This is my last question, but we're gonna bring it back to the conference. And just curious, what are you looking forward to the most from attending the conference? And what do you hope attendees will gain from attending your session or the conference in general?
So there are a lot of topics that are part of this conference in terms of presentations that's going to happen, panel discussions, entertainment in terms of playing board games and RPGs. I think what I'm want to gain from the conference is empowerment. I know that I don't know everything, so being able to show up in this space will allow me to learn so much more. Being able to connect with other women from different parts of the nation, doing things that's similar to what I'm doing professionally. And I think that others will gain that sense of pride in what you've chosen to do for the trajectory of your life, how to maintain ethics, being professional, being authentic, being able to do therapy in a way that you feel comfortable, but also learning about code of ethics, learning about financial aspects, learning about resilience, learning about mental health and maternal health. I think there are going to be a lot of topics that are going to be amazing to learn. And I think that even if I didn't have this space, I may have not learned this information because there are going to be wonderful women that have honed into these topics and it's going to be promoting these topics because they're passionate about it. And that passion is going to help me to learn more. So I'm really excited about that for this conference.
Absolutely. And you're a pioneer.
Yes, we are
Yes.
pioneers. Yes.
Yes. And Jasmine is definitely a pioneer. And
Yes, she is.
yes. And just reiterating, she has your session topic in particular is CE approved.
It
And
is.
so as people are coming from all over the nation, these are in person, because I know Louisiana, which is next to Texas, has to have in-person CE. Certain states have to have in-person CEs. These are in-person CEs that you're going to be able to take back to your home state, even though the conference is being held in Texas. And Dr. Gail, your session topic has been approved for a CE. So we're really excited to be able you're gonna have a full room.
Yes, I'm excited for that. I'm really excited. It's gonna be interactive, so we get to learn from each other. We should be able to have good conversation discussion.
Absolutely. Dr. Gail, thank you so much for coming on the Goddesses of Social Work podcast. I have so enjoyed this conversation and I've learned so much today. Thank
Thank
you.
you so much. This was absolutely wonderful.
Awesome.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of the Goddesses of Social Work podcast. We are glad you were here. If you liked this episode, please come back to hear more stories of the journeys through social work and please leave us a review on Apple or Spotify. See you next time here on the Goddesses of Social Work podcast.